Welcome, it's Friday, and you're still tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. I want to thank you all for being here with us all week long. I'm Dave Schrader, that's Tim Dennis. You're looking well-rested, Mr. Dennis.
Well, thank you.
That Casper bed must be working for you.
It's doing wonders.
That's great. Yeah. And for those of you, you've been asking me in email, is it true? Is he really getting better sleep? Are you both feeling better? I know it's an outlay of money when you want to put out something like that, but yes, I can promise you folks, Casper beds, Casper mattresses have been working wonders for both of us.
Absolutely.
Full night's sleep and everything. Again, you can try out CasperTrial.com/darkness. And then when you go in there, use 50 sleep as your code to save $50 off of any of their mattresses. They're not even our sponsor tonight, but I wanted to mention that because I've had so many emails since you and I have been talking about this.
Yeah.
Wondering if this is just part of our illicit gains or are we legitimately behind Casper? I've told you.
Legitimately.
We pick who we want to have on our show. You know, we'll have a few that'll come our way, I'm sure, that'll want to advertise with us on their own, but we're getting a chance to go out and pick advertisers, and Casper Bed was among them. Another one of our favorites, Tim, is sponsoring today's show. It's Audible by Amazon. And I live by Audible. I absolutely love it. They've got over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or your MP3 player. And as a listener of Beyond the Darkness podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Just go to audibletrial.com/darkness and you get that free audiobook and a 30-day free trial to give a try to. Our other sponsor for the day is Amazon, which is the world's largest shopping center. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to buy anything, do us a favor. Help us out by going to darknessradio.com, click on the killer deals link, and you'll see the Amazon banners pop up. Click any of those that correspond with your area, Canada, the United States, or the UK. And if you make a purchase using those links, a small portion of the sale goes a long way to help us defray the costs of doing the show that we do. And it helps us out considerably. Thank you to all of the listeners around the world that have been using it. Thank you so much. It means a lot to us. And I want to address this one more time here, Tim, for this week.
Sure.
We're back. True Crime Tuesday is back every Tuesday. We just started this last week. JT Townsend was our guest as we talked about the Cincinnati Psycho, the Strangler of Cincinnati. Very creepy, chilling case. It is available, though. We're doing it through a different service, through Patreon service. We wanted to make it available to you through Podcast One. At this time, they don't have the slot available. We didn't have the time or patience to wait. And they encourage us to go find a new way to get that show out to you. And as we've told you over the years, we've been doing the show out of the love of our hearts. We love doing Beyond the Darkness and True Crime Tuesday. We're bringing you a sixth show every week. It's $5 to subscribe for True Crime Tuesday. That'll give you 4 episodes every month delivered to you. It's 90 minutes to 120 minutes long, and you'll never get a repeat. It's always brand new material, guaranteed at least 4 episodes a month. And on top of that, there are a few months where you're going to have an additional fifth Tuesday. We're going to throw in that extra episode for free, Tim, because I love these people.
That's what I hear about
you. I would like to bed every one of our listeners and just have a big snuggle party with them while we listen to True Crime Tuesday. Is that wrong?
No, well, there's laws.
How do you get signed up? It's real simple. Just go to darknessradio.com. You'll see the True Crime Tuesday banner on the front of the page. Click that banner. You can go subscribe. $5 a month, $1.25 an episode. That's all it's going to cost you. And you get commercial ad-free episodes every week for you. And you've been wanting to help us out. This goes a long way. Without doing advertising, without doing sponsorship, all this money comes out of our pockets for streaming, production, studio time, everything. So the $5 helps us defray those costs, pay everything out, and Tim and I get a small stipend at the end to keep us going as well. Mm-hmm. So help us help you be entertained and become a subscriber on our Patreon page for True Crime Tuesday. I want to thank all the people that have already jumped on board and doing that now. Thank you for believing in us and for enjoying the entertainment that we bring to you every week. Tonight, Tim, as we wrap up another fun-filled week, we have a new episode of Theater of the Mind, and it's unlike anyone we've done before.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Varla Ventura joins us this evening. Fairies, pukas, and changelings. A complete guide to the wild and wicked enchanted realm. Varla is the author of this book, and she has been with us in the past talking about other fantastic books, everything from banshees, werewolves, vampires, and other creatures of the night. Mermaids, we've talked about, Tim. What else? Freaky facts and strange stories, beyond mm-hmm. bizarre, frightening facts, and blood-curdling true tales. So we've got a lot of really cool stories that she's shared with us in the past. She's back again tonight. Varla, thank you for coming back with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'll go on record saying I'm down with true crime snuggling. That sounds great.
Right. No way to listen to more cruel punishment than snuggled up to 2 to 13,000 of our favorite people, right? All in one bed.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge true crime fan. Actually, I spent a lot of time listening to true crime podcasts and walking around, walking my dog at night. And it's pretty freaky.
Yeah, that's not the best idea, Varla.
I've heard that before.
For listeners that haven't heard you before, because we've had you on Darkness Radio quite a few times, not here on Beyond the Darkness since we relaunched this year. Tell us a little of your background, Varla. What brought you, what kind of interests brought you to writing and researching all of these fascinating topics?
Well, I was raised in a semi-unconventional household, which I didn't think about at the time, like most people don't. And then sort of realized later on that, other people go to, they go to like church on Sunday and they, they do other things that are wholesome. And, we were much, much too busy hunting fairies and decorating for Halloween months in advance and having picnics in cemeteries. So, this was kind of our norm. My mom was very interested in the occult arts and sciences and had, a lot of books on the shelf that I didn't understand when I was a kid, but I would still, see the books and poke around in them a little bit. And, we did little mini seances and things like that. But nothing, it never felt like frightening or scary or inappropriate. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that I was, put in this kind of strange environment, but it was actually very normal. All of my siblings, I have six siblings and we all enjoy a good cemetery walk and, have sort of an appreciation for ghost stories and the spooky side of things. One of us buys the newest Stephen King and then we all pass it around between all the sisters. So it's a family affair to a certain extent. And I just have always been, I've always been very drawn to just at being an avid reader and writers from a young age and then just always drawn to fairy tales, the creepy old, the Andersen fairy tales and the Grimm's fairy tales and folklore and also just sort of, people's ghost encounters, UFO sightings, all things that kind of, fall in that realm. And then, just kind of random strange news things. And so that's sort of how I got into writing like beyond the Book of the Bizarre and Beyond Bizarre, which are more of, kind of a collection of things and of the sort of strange and unusual plus, individual people who had been telling me all my life, these specific encounters that they'd had and finally record them. So I have a number of kind of is pushing me in that direction to, write a couple of books and then it just spiraled out of control from there.
This is a good kind of out of control though, Varla. Let's talk the new book, Fairies, Pukas and Changelings, A Complete Guide to the Wild and Wicked Enchanted Realm. New topic for our show here with you. This is something that I'm fascinated by. Many of our listeners are, many years ago, I would poo-poo the idea of fairies and elves, gnomes, goblins, all of that is just silly fantasy fare. And Rosemary Ellen Guiley said to me, Dave, so you will talk and listen and believe in Bigfoot and chupacabras and ghosts and poltergeists and demonic possession, and you'll believe in haunted possessions. But the idea that these creatures, which outdate most of our stories, that's just too impossible to believe. And it put me back on my heels, Varla, and it made me reconsider.
I love Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
Right.
She has a great way of putting things and kind of putting sort of these older stories in a more contemporary light as well. That is really common, actually, and I encountered that a lot with mermaids. Nobody wanted to talk about having a mermaid encounter or having, not a real mermaid encounter. Nobody wanted to say that they thought mermaids were real, although mermaids are something that everybody sort of loves, and they're sort of culturally loved, but you know, it's just kind of this funny thing because people will believe in all different kinds of things, but no one wants to admit. And I did actually finally have a few people come forward and tell me about their eerie mermaid or what they thought were mermaid experiences. But that's definitely very true. A lot of people who do believe in a lot of the other things in the sort of paranormal and cryptid world do have a hard time accepting fairies. But maybe just to start off, we can get out of the way what we're talking about with fairies.
Well, hold on. Before we do that, listen, last 2 weeks we've done the show. We've talked about these weird news stories with mermaids popping up. One where some children were drowned by a mermaid.
I read that story.
Right. Yeah. We talked about that. We also had another story where a woman just showed up out of the blue claiming she was a mermaid. And I think her name was like Joanne, and it was a very weird story. But mermaids, our listeners have been enjoying that. Can you tell us a couple of stories revolving around mermaids? We'd love to hear that to start us off.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm happy to talk about mermaids all night. So mermaids, one of my favorite stories that I actually received in working on the mermaid book, there's plenty of beautiful old, Irish tales of mermaid encounters. There's some very, very frightening descriptions, particularly of mermen, where they have very ferocious fangs and kind of, gnarly faces. But there's a couple of really cool stories that I included in the book that were shared with me. And one was somebody's actual mermaid encounter. And I'm telling you, I put a call out for this over and over again. It was very difficult to get anyone to come forward. And the woman who did come forward did so with some reservation because, she didn't tell very many people this story. This story, people looked down their noses at her and said, well, you've really gone off the deep end. No pun intended. So she was vacationing in the Bahamas and sort of woke up in the night and felt something in her room. Her description of it was so like so many stories I've heard of people having supernatural encounters or, ghost experiences. It was, she woke up in the night, she felt something in her room, but she fell back asleep. Her mother had also felt something in the room. They were staying in this sort of one of those bungalows that kind of sticks out over the water. But then she woke up and she saw someone in her room, and it was sort of a male creature that appeared to be a fish from the waist down, and it had kind of glowing eyes and red hair, and it looked a little scary. She actually had a sketch that she sent that she had done of it that she sent along to me, and it had a very elfin like face. And she just sort of stared, and it stared back at her, and then it went away. She like blinked or, rubbed her eyes and was like, oh my God. And it went away. And then she went back to sleep and thought, I must have been dreaming. And then her mom had also in the night around that same time, she woke up, but she was, didn't see anything. And then the next day they didn't really talk about it, but they noticed there was a lot of water in their room. And so finally she said to her mom, Mom, I saw this thing in our room. And the mother had said, I woke up around that time. I felt like something was there. I couldn't explain it. It felt very strange. So that was one of the very few kind of firsthand account mermaid encounters that I had heard. And I've heard a few since then, mostly from people who've spent a lot of time sailing. A friend of mine's mother, she and her mother lived on boats for the majority of her childhood. And there were many times when, one time in particular, she told me about her very, very foggy. And, people were like banging pots and pans to keep from, running into each other, to let each other know where they were. And, kind of in this harbor. And they all heard this sound. It was like a singing, sort of like a loon, sort of like a woman. And later, when the kind of the fog cleared, and you know, it's this little community of people who live in their boats and fish, and they all kind of talked about this voice. They had all heard it, and it was kind of cutting through, you know, the fog, but no one could really place it. And everybody claimed it wasn't them making the noise, and was sort of a supernatural thing. So she said to me, I mean, mermaids are real. We know that that's what that was. And it was keeping everyone from going out into the water and keeping whoever was out there from running into the rocks. So those are just a couple of, you know, sort of, you know, real mermaid experiences that I've heard of late.
Very cool. All right, well, let's get digging in here. I know you were about to give us kind of an explanation of these different topics, so why don't we turn back to that, Varla?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say, like, when we're talking about fairies, we should sort of, like, qualify what that means. So I do like to let people know, especially anyone who's easily frightened or offended, that my book does come with a warning. We are not talking about little lovely creatures that flit from flower to flower and make your garden grow. Although there is a place for garden fairies, we're talking about sort of some of the greater fairy kingdom. The term of fairy as a greater defining sort of name for all of these creatures that fit under that, including things that are tricky and mischievous and a little bit, you know, devious, and certainly quite can be quite frightening, especially if you were to encounter them alone at night. So when we say fairy, you know, you can just dash Tinkerbell from your mind.
All right. So what are the real cases of fairies? Are they miniature, little minuscule looking light up creatures? Are they more like smaller hobbit-sized people? What exactly do we categorize real, true fairies?
So there's a lot of creatures that fit into the fairy kingdom. You have something that might be about 2 to 3 feet high. You might call it a brownie, a hobgoblin, a coblin, and those things are considered sort of domestic fairies, and they're sort of little impish guys that kind of live around with people and, you know, help you out. And, you know, they're a little more mindful of, you know, families, and they, you know, they like to steal things and hide things, but mostly as long as you give them what they expect and put in a good day's work, they'll help you with the menial tasks around your house and help to protect your home. So that's one kind of like category, like domestic fairies. Then you have, you know, some pretty things like pukas, which are shapeshifters, and they, you know, can usually turn into, you know, looks like a normal horse 1 minute, and then suddenly it has glowing eyes, and you're find yourself on the back of this horse that's taking you on a midnight ride and, you know, scaring you half to death. Or they might appear as a rabbit, or occasionally an eagle or a dog or some other kind of animal. Banshees do fit into this category. I don't really talk about banshees in this book, mostly because I covered them in another book. It was very hard for me not to include them, so there's a little bit about them. But banshees are sort of, you know, the warning ghost of the fairy kingdom. They exist to make this kind of wild wail and warn you of illness and death nearby, although they don't themselves cause it. Then you have dwarves, you have goblins, you have, there's just like a huge range of little creatures and some slightly larger creatures. You do have trolls, which most people think of as larger, and they are often large. And in Scandinavia, they're actually thought to be quite beautiful, unlike what you consider trolls to be. They actually look at trolls as being quite beautiful and sort of this kind of part of a supernatural race.
All right, so these are our players for the evening.
Yeah,
let's start talking about these characters. I mean, I've had a great chance over the last few years to visit Scotland, Ireland, Germany, Prague, and we've heard many of the stories of these different type of characters. And to me, it's funny, when we were over in Ireland, they kind of scoffed at us about ghosts, right? They're all like, oh, your ghosts, it's so funny, we don't even think about it over here. It's kind of unremarkable to us, right? And they're kind of laughing at what rubes we are, but yet we have to detour around a bush because that's where the fairies are. and we don't want to disrupt the fairy bush. And if we are going to stop, we have to leave a tribute to the fairies. And we're all on the bus like, what in the hell is going on here? Ghosts are goofy to them, but the idea of fairy folk is completely acceptable. And it's fascinating to watch these cultures and hear these stories.
Yeah, and I've spent quite a bit of time in Ireland and Scotland, and so a lot of the stories and the folklore that I'm drawn toward comes from that area, as well as parts of like Eastern Europe and the Scandinavian countries. You do find a lot of trolls and elves and very similar sort of woodland creatures. But of course there's also, you know, Italy, there's South America. These kind of things do exist all over the world. And one thing that I found.
They even have them in Italy?
Oh yeah. In Italy there.
That would explain Joe Pesci, Tim.
Oh yeah.
Joe Pesci is part of the fairy folk.
He actually could be a changeling. That is a possibility there. He survived, and now he's, you know, changelings often when they grow up to be very talented artists. So
really? All right.
Different genres. But yes, in Italy, it's funny because the one story I read about these little sort of equivalent to like a brownie was this little creature in Italy that helped children keep their rooms clean. But if they didn't keep their room clean, they were, you know, punished horribly. So a lot of these.
That's it. I'm moving to Italy with the kids, Tim. You're going to have to take on the show from here on your own now.
But I mean, a lot of the, you know, it's such an interesting mix, because while you have like, you have stories and you have things that are cautionary tales that are, you know, perhaps keeping everyone a little closer to the campfire and, you know, trying to make sure that children aren't wandering into the bog on their own. You also have like so many similarities. I think you probably see this with, you know, certain ghost encounters or certain, you know, what people are saying about Bigfoot. There's certain similarities to these stories. And I actually found it quite challenging when I started this book, because I would read about a particular fairy, like say the brownie, and I would do all this research and I would write something up, and then I would meanwhile be reading something else, and there would be this something called a Nisi in Scandinavia, and God, that sounded just like a brownie. It was, you know, a house spirit, and it you know, it looks after the family and it expects like a dish of milk. And so I began to see the threads between so many of these creatures and, you know, the different regions. They have different names. And, you know, just like here, I kind of liken it to the way, you know, in California, we say soda. In the Midwest, you know, we say pop. So it's like, it's all, you know, we're all talking about a soft drink, sparkling beverage, but we're calling it by all these different names. And so I started to see a lot of that happening with many of these fairy creatures, especially the ones that, in the book I focused on, like a lot of the domestic kind of guys that like to hang out and help.
Wow, those are definitely the kind I'd like to encounter. You know, we've got an interesting story coming up in our Theater of the Mind regarding changeling and a chance encounter with a changeling. Can you tell us, give us a description? What are changelings? What do they do?
Okay, well, now I'm extremely intrigued. So changelings are quite frightening, and many people are very disturbed when they hear the description of what a changeling is. But a changeling, by, you know, folkloric definition, is a fairy switch of a baby. Occasionally, it can be an older child or sometimes an adult. And there are plenty of stories of full-grown people being sort of lured into the fairy kingdom, but that's not exactly a changeling. A changeling is when you have a baby in a cradle, and then that human baby is replaced with a fairy baby, and then the parents are left to sort of raise this bizarre thing, and the human baby goes off to live a rather glorious life in the kingdom of the fairy. So you have a pretty huge range of what can happen in these situations. You can have people trying to get their babies back. You can have, you know, certain precautions you can take to prevent it. You can have people who never see their child again. You can have people who raise the changeling as their own, and then this person grows up and goes on to live a normal life in, you know, society, and is often very gifted musically or artistically in some way. So the short answer is that, you know, there's sort of a kidnapping element to changelings, which makes the stories particularly frightening.
So what is this? Now, the changeling is actually a fairy child that's taken a larger form?
It's basically just a fairy baby that's put in place of a human baby. So today, just to clarify, today we might think of the term of changeling can be used to sort of describe different things, or sort of the act of like switching something out. But in sort of the true folkloric definition, it is the, you know, putting a fairy baby in place of a human baby, changing it out.
All right. And to what end? Why would the fairies need to do that? Just a problem child? They needed to get rid of one foreign exchange student program?
All right. So well worth pondering. I mean, I think there is this ongoing relationship that we have with fairies and the fairy kingdom that as we are fascinated with them and what, you know, this other world that they live in and the magic that they bring, and they are just as fascinated with us and the desire to sort of like see if they can keep a human in, you know, it's not unlike some of the, you know, contemporary alien abduction stories that you hear. You read some of these old stories of like luring these people into the world of fairy, and it's like, no, you can never go. And it's, you see this with mermaid stories all the time. It's like the mermaids don't really set out to, you know, they would never identify themselves as murderous beasts. They just love you so much, they want to keep you with them down under the water where you can't breathe. So there's definitely some kind of like, you know, big fascination there. And I'm sure that, you know, there's a mutual kind of study. And I mean, there's certainly people who then are raised as, you know, changelings who are raised as humans that then go on to procreate. And you also have, you know, that situation with, that happens with Selkies. There are many, many stories of Selkies who are, you know, basically they can shift from being the seals to being these beautiful women that can marry mortal men as long as they never discover their seal coat. And then they have children, and there's all these beautiful old Irish folk songs about, you know, the Selkie maid having to leave behind her babe because her coat was discovered, and she watches from afar. And, you know, there's all these stories of like seals with human eyes, and they're believed to be Selkies. So there's this ongoing, you know, eternal relationship with the fairy kingdom and fairy creatures that, you know, is probably beyond really the real depth of certainly my understanding. I don't know why they do it, but, you know, for probably the same reason that I look for them.
Well, I know there was wasn't a George C. Scott movie called The Changeling as well?
So if that's the one, there was one I saw when I was a kid that terrified me. And that was about a child who had been drowned and then got sort of hidden away. And then the twin was like in its place as if it were a, you know, regular grown up. You know, nothing had happened to this poor child. So there's this kind of idea that, you know, something happens to the beloved normal baby. And then the other thing about changelings is that they can be very sickly, and sometimes they're misidentified as like, you know, there are times when they were called vampires, or it was said that there was a witch's curse on them because they could never really get well, or they just ate so much and they just, you know, it seemed to sort of not behave in a completely normal way. And so those were like some of the ways that you could identify that you had a changeling.
Wow. Fascinating stuff. Well, folks, we're at that time of the show. Audible presents a brand new theater of the mind, a true encounter, the chance encounter with a changeling. That's next on Beyond the Darkness.
A real-life chance encounter with a changeling, as told by Emin Bray. I grew up around the medieval town of Kilkenny, Ireland, and had a rather boring and mundane life, but that all changed for me when I was around 10. A lad from our town went missing over a period of several days. This was in the mid-50s, so there was no fast way to locate someone that would vanish, and no way to really make everyone aware of the dilemma in a timely manner. But once word got out with the town gossips, news was all over, and they would crack on it and spread it like wildfire. I knew the boy from school, and we played and spent a lot of time together, so I was truly shocked. People murmured that he must be dead by now. Some would mumble under their breath about the fairy folk secreting him away. Whatever the case, it was tragic and very scary. People from all around gathered in the city center to set about looking for the boy, and it took every part of 5 or 6 days to locate him. And when they did, they found him holed up in a cave, looking as fresh as the day he went missing, like no time had passed. A huge crowd collected around the boy, and they hit him with a barrage of questions. Where had he been? Did someone take him? Was he hurt? He was clean, not the least bit manky. He looked well-nourished, well-hydrated. It made no sense. Not a stain on his clothes, not a scratch on his body. But one thing, very different. He had always had deep brown eyes, but he now had a very distinct flash of green in his right eye. It was very noticeable and bright, and took up a fair segment of the eye. The other odd thing was that the boy had always been the talkative sort, and never very shy, but now he was very quiet. But who could blame him? He had been missing for a number of days. We all figured he must be in shock from it all. But he wasn't. It was the strangest thing. He was very melancholy about it, said he had no concept of how long he had been gone. He had set about exploring and wandering and found the shallow cave, went in to have a sit, and was feeling a bit knackered, so he may have nodded off for a bit, but nothing extraordinary happened. The only thing the doctors found was a slight bump on the back of his head. They guessed that the trauma may be responsible for his memory loss and the change in eye color, although none of us could really buy that excuse. Now, after a few weeks, things settled down. The town had all but forgotten or just plain moved on since, after all, in the end, all was well. When his folks finally deemed him healthy enough to return to play, we began hanging out again. He was a different kid than before. Much more quiet, and something else was off about him. I couldn't put my finger on it at first, but I knew something strange was going on. It wasn't until I focused on that eye that I realized. He never blinked. No matter how long I would try to keep a steady gaze, his eyes were unblinking and cold. He had gotten a lot faster, too. I had always had a pretty good step on him for games like tag, but now this could move, and he never huffed and puffed like the rest of us. And we would all eventually collapse to the ground in a sweaty, achy heap. He would just stand there and stare off. It was like he was going through the motions of being a playful kid, but wasn't actually enjoying the participation. I thought maybe the bump on the head did more damage than originally believed, and that this fellow was no longer the full shilling. Now, on one particular day, we were out with a group of us playing hide-and-seek. I was the seeker and had to find them all. I eventually did, but I couldn't find Colin anywhere. The whole lot of us took to looking for him, and we began to feel the worst, that he may have gone missing again. After a good 40 minutes of hollering for him and all us kids spread out looking, I stumbled on a scene I still cannot forget, no matter how hard I try. There, behind some bushes, I located him, along with my good friend Aiden. We stared in astonishment. Huddled up over a torn-apart hair was Colin. He was eating the damn thing. We stood there gawking, our mouths hung open in utter disbelief. He slowly turned to us. His eyes were wild, his face covered in tufts of fur and blood. He almost looked like a bit plastered, like he had guzzled down a few pints. I yelled, "Hey, boyo, you better cop on and get right with yourself." He just stared at us. Then his voice cackled out, "Get on with you both." With that, we turned tail and got out of there. I got home and wasn't sure how to process what I had just seen. My parents were out, so I went to tell my mama. She was an old timer. And when I explained to her all that I had seen, she forbade me from being around Colin again. She informed me that he was no longer Colin. She explained, a changeling is a creature, the offspring of a fairy, troll, elf, or other legendary beastie that had been secretly left in the place of a human child. This was the common belief about a child who had been taken or missing. I initially laughed it off, thinking Mama was having a time pulling my leg, but she was serious, deadly serious. She said they take kids that wander off, and they replace them with their own kind, but are unable to replicate them perfectly. That would explain the eyes, the weird personality shift, and the bloody mess we had just witnessed. I took Mamo's advice and I left him alone, never played or hung out with him again. Although his name would pop up too often in local conversations regarding some weird new tale. He was the only one that survived an electrical fire with almost no damage, but his two roommates perished in the same blaze, sleeping only 10 feet away. He survived two head-on car collisions with no injuries. Our paths did not cross again until about 5 years ago. Now well into our late 60s, he looks like he hasn't aged in 20 years. We met at a pub, a friend's birthday gathering. I stayed away for a while observing him, his mannerisms, his movements. He reminded me of a lizard. Now, after tossing back a few pints, I steadied myself and decided to ask him about what happened all those years ago. I approached him from behind, and in one swift move, he spun to face me, hand outstretched, as though he knew I was coming. "Good to see you again, Emin," he said, as he grasped my hand in a firm shake. I faked a smile and stared into his unblinking eyes and nodded. Hi, Colin, I stammered. He gazed deeply into my eyes, and I swear, without moving his lips, his voice seemed to change and escape his mouth in an authoritative growl. "Hey, boyo, you better cop on and get right with yourself." Even through the wall of sound from the people in the pub and the Irish music blaring, I could hear his voice like it was spoken directly into my ear. Then he smiled this distorted grin at me, pulling me close so I could see even closer into his eyes. And they changed. That flash of green seemed to light up as his pupils changed to slits, like an animal, like a cat. "Run along now, boyo. Didn't your mama warn you about me?" He released my hand and stepped back. I took my cue and moved quickly back to my bar stool and waiting pint. I sat, sweaty and nervous. I turned to scan my surroundings to see where he was, and I couldn't locate him anywhere among the masses. That's when the birthday boy approached me along with some friends and asked how I was and why I was keeping to myself. Didn't I know this was a party? I apologized and said, "I just had the weirdest run-in with Colin." They all looked bewildered. "Colin who?" they questioned. Then they informed me he hadn't been there that night. They would have seen and noticed him for sure. They thought I was putting them on, and I reluctantly returned to the party, always looking over my shoulder and scanning the room, all the while fearing another chance encounter with a changeling.
Beyond the darkness.
And we're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. Today's episode being brought to you by our friends at Audible. And Tim, I am a huge fan, as you know. We do so much traveling that I love to take Audible with me. Mm-hmm. They've got over 180,000 different topics on every variety, every genre you could consider. There are great books that you can take with you, and they're fascinating, right? So you're no longer in this 2-hour car ride by yourself.
Right.
You can be transported to the realm of the hobbits or the wonderful land of Oz. You can ride along with your favorite musicians as you hear their biographies unfold before you, as I've done with the Bruce Springsteen story, Born to Run. And I just absolutely love this. We've been touting the fact that The X-Files mm-hmm. has an exclusive with Audible coming out this year.
Yep.
They're going to be doing The X-Files Cold Cases,
yep.
where they're going to do some great new stories. David Duchovny, Jill Gillian Anderson, Mitch Pileggi, and the three guys from The Lone Gunman are going to be joining the cast. So you can actually hear these stories. And this takes place between the end of the last movie and the beginning of the last 10-part episode series. So it's kind of that filler gap that you'll be able to hear some of these stories coming out. And Audible's always on top of it. They've got great exclusive programming. They've got it all going on for you. And it's fun. It's affordable. It's a great way to take it with you. And what we've got for the listeners of our show, Tim, Audible has got a great program set up. For the listeners of Beyond the Darkness, they're offering a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. It's that simple. Just go to audibletrial.com/darkness. That's audibletrial.com/darkness, where you can hear over 180,000 titles on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or your MP3 player.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's simple, and it's great. I love Audible. Again, I don't know how I'd get through my day without it when I'm doing all the traveling I do.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps me company on the road when I drive back and forth from Minneapolis to St. Cloud every week to record our show.
Yep.
When I'm out on the road heading to Chicago to do the paranormal conference or out to, you know, the Palmer House, any of these cool destinations I can drive to, I love taking Audible with me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they're part of an Amazon company. So Amazon, you know, is the world's largest online retailer and mall, right? You can find everything on Amazon.com.
And I have.
Yeah. And here's a way to help out your buddies on Beyond the Darkness. Every time you make a purchase, just purchase through the link we have at darknessradio.com on the Killer Deals link. Just click that link for Killer Deals. You'll see all of our advertisers there. Click on the Amazon link that fits your area, the UK, Canada, or the United States. Every order you place, a very small portion of it's going to go a long way to help us on the show maintain the streaming fees, maintain everything we can to keep the costs down on doing the show. Because I don't know if you know this, it costs money to put together a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Money and time and studio rental, production time, editing bays. We have to pay for it all, and that helps to defray these costs.
Yep.
So, when you go, make sure you use that and then bookmark that link. So every time you make a purchase off Amazon.com, and even if you're an Amazon Prime member, if you go in through the link we give you, every purchase you make will go a long way to help out your buddies here on Beyond the Darkness. So please do that. Make sure you check it out. Hey, aside from this week, what, you got 5 episodes of Beyond the Darkness. Mm-hmm. You've got True Crime Tuesday. And if you want to find out how you can subscribe to that, go check out darknessradio.com. Click on the True Crime Tuesday banner, and it'll take you to our Patreon page where you can sign up. $5 a month will get you 4 brand new episodes, 90 to 120 minute long episodes, 90 minutes to 2 hours long every episode. And you can catch that for $5 a month, $1.25 an episode. And we're doing it for you ad free. No commercials, none of this. You just get pure entertainment value. You get the true crimes, you get dumb crimes, stupid criminals every week without fail. No reruns. It'll just be straight up for you to enjoy. And you'll have the exclusives on that. That'll be the only way to hear True Crime Tuesdays through our Patreon page. And by being a patron of that page, you help us so that we can defray the costs, because without advertising dollars coming in, we have to cover all of the expenses. Plus, again, it helps out your buddies here on the show. So please go sign up for that. You guys are doing fantastic already, and we really, really appreciate that. And while you're checking out darknessradio.com, check out our events page. You'll see the tab. Go click on it. You can find out where you can meet us throughout the United States this next year and around the world. I'll be going out to England in August. There are a few seats that still remain. If you'd like to join me for an amazing tour of haunted and historic England, then please go sign up. Neil Story is our guest and our tour guide for the entire trip. Our September trip sold out in 18 hours. We're already half sold out on this trip. We'd love for you to join us in August when we go for the first wave British invasion tour. All that information is at darknessradio.com under the events tab. So check that out for yourself. We're back with Varla Ventura, fairies, pukas, and changelings, a complete guide to the wild and wicked enchanted realm. Start to tell some of your favorite stories, Varla, that you collected of these different fae folk and magical creatures. I'd love to hear some of the personal experiences people have related to you over the years.
Well, I've had a couple of people call in or, you know, contact me after they've heard a show or they've read the book to kind of share their own experiences of seeing, you know, seeing something that they couldn't explain or that they, you know, dismissed until, you know, a light went on when they heard some other people talking about it. I mean, I can relate my own experience, which, you know, I certainly, even as much of a, you know, supernaturalist as I am, I certainly went through a period of time where I thought, oh, I'm sure what I saw when I was a kid was just imaginary. But I saw Leprechaun when I was a child, and I was convinced that I had seen it. And the thing that was probably the most convincing about it was it was just a very glimpse of what looked like a small man, but not in the way that you see leprechauns portrayed today. Much less, a little grubbier, really. It just sort of looked like a scrappy little miner looking guy. It was not a very well dressed with, you know, fine heels and, you know, a lovely cloak and all of that. He just looked like this, like, craggy little thing. And then what really threw me off about it, now I'm going to just say I was like seven when this happened. So this is why for many years I just sort of, there's no way I saw that. You know, I mean, I thought I saw Cookie Monster when I was two. So I'm sure this leprechaun thing couldn't have.
But no, me see leprechaun too, Varla.
Yeah. So yummy. So the thing that always stood out in my mind was I turned and yelled to my sister and my mom I was down on this lovely little creek and we were staying in this campground. There was no one else around. It was kind of summer had come and gone and it was fall and we were still staying at this campground. And, I was amusing myself down by the creek, sort of wandering around, and I saw this thing, and then I yelled for my mom and my sister, and then I turned back, and the leaf was moving, and that image actually stands out in my mind more than anything. So fast forward, you know, a number of years, and then, not even that many more years, but then I began to have, I had more than one experience where, you know, I saw the ghost of a, you know, deceased loved one. And, you know, when you're young and children especially are so wonderful for this, because if fairies, children can see fairies much easier than just as they can with ghosts. So I had a couple of paranormal experiences where, you know, I saw a ghost. Now in my adult life, all of the paranormal experiences that I have had, and there's, you know, maybe a handful, have been sort of like physical, or I've been able to smell or sense something. I have not seen a physical manifestation in front of me, but when I was a child, I was able, and I had several things. And when I started researching and like getting more into fairies and sort of saying like, what's beyond the folklore, that's when I kind of started believing that, you know, for some reason we have this need to sort of dismiss you know, what children see or what children say they see as imaginary and as unreal. And, you know, we can do a lot of damage to kids by, you know, telling them that ghosts aren't real. If they keep seeing them, they keep having this encounter, and then they're really confused because their parents are saying it's not real. And yet this thing keeps happening. This something, you know, you're much better off telling them not to be frightened than to tell them that it's not real. And I was lucky because my mom, you know, patiently listened to all of the crazy things that I said and did, even into my, you know, teenage years. Well, I didn't tell her all of the things, but, you know, she was understanding and aware of, you know, kind of that idea that you don't frighten children more by telling them that that what they see is not valid. So once I sort of got into, you know, really sort of studying the folklore of it, then I kind of began to just believe that what I saw was legitimate and to kind of, you know, you check myself when, you know, my own son says something and it's just like, really? Are you sure? All right. Okay. Yeah. So we, you know, it's sort of a matter of perception. But because of this, I've always been quite fascinated with leprechauns and what leprechauns really are, and not necessarily the sort of what we think they are. And in researching this book, I actually found several really wonderful stories that are probably my favorite of all of the stories, including one. The three leprechaun stories that I included in the book are sort of old Irish folklore, and they are all different and all very unique leprechaun encounters and all excellent examples of classic Irish storytelling. And one involves Halloween, which surprised me, and sort of a like midnight fairy excursion in order for this young man to, and it's, believe it or not, it's a leprechaun story, but it's this young man kind of trying to find his true love. And one involves a very pious man who doesn't believe in leprechauns and doesn't drink in the pub and doesn't do any of the, you know, quote unquote, bad things. And yet he's ostracized from the village because he's very prosperous and everybody's sure that he's captured a leprechaun and he won't give up where the leprechaun is. So in his denial of the leprechaun, he's actually kind of dooms himself. And the third is this like hilarious story about this guy who captures a leprechaun. He's very mean to the leprechaun and sort of pokes him and is torturing him and, you know, give me your gold. And so the leprechaun outwits him and has him take this magic purse, which all leprechauns carry. Now, this is a true thing. All leprechauns carry this magic purse. And in this magic purse is gold, of course. They don't haul around a pot of gold. They have this magic purse. So he gets the magic purse from, you know, the leprechaun. The leprechaun says, let me go. You can have this. It only has one coin in it. But every time you reach in, you will find another coin. And so the guy says, oh, great. Okay, fine. So he pokes him a little bit more and then he lets him go. Gets the purse, lets him go. And of course, the guy goes down to the pub. Dinner's on me. Drink's on me. And, you know, the bar keeps giving him the stink eye. So he finally goes to pay and he pulls out the gold coin and he sets it down on the bar. And she's like, that's not enough. And he says, don't worry. This is a magic purse from a leprechaun. And he reaches in and he pulls it out and there's nothing in there, of course. And so it's totally just like he's been completely duped. And of course, everybody, you know, laughs at him and he has to go and like scrub all the pots in the kitchen in order to.
Stupid leprechaun.
Stupid leprechaun, cursing the leprechaun all the way.
It is. It's interesting, right? And you were talking about trolls, but they're in Iceland and some of those countries, they look at this very seriously. And have this kind of high regards for the area that these creatures inhabit, like we do with animals and endangered species here in the United States.
Yeah. And one thing that really surprised me is that, like most people, I have the idea of trolls being these rather hideous beings. And when I was researching sort of some of the Scandinavian versions of similar fairy creatures, I came upon a story about a troll wedding. And trolls are actually sort of a beautiful race there and are tall and blonde and attractive, not surprisingly. And so I was like, what? I've never heard of a troll being a lovely being before. But they're actually sort of revered and thought to sort of protect, you know, large tracts of land. And then I had never heard this before, but when trolls disappear, they turn into balls of yarn. I never heard
balls
that.
Balls of yarn?
Balls of yarn.
Okay.
It's a Scandinavian tradition, this Scandinavian belief, not a tradition. And there's a story that I read about this sort of like, you know, they were having this troll wedding and then the, you know, to disappear, they, you know, the person came in and there was nothing but balls of yarn in this little cottage, you know, that had been up on the hill. So I had never heard anything like that before. And it just sort of made me realize that, you know, we have certain set ideas. We have our, you know, Hollywood version of fairies or our Disney version of fairies. And, you know, trolls can be, you know, trolls kind of get a bad rap, I guess. You know, they're protective spirits. And in Scandinavia, at least, they're quite attractive. So, and sometimes even marry into mortal families.
I think I know a couple celebrity families that might be trolls and have married into this not so far removed. Now, how many of these kind of creatures have translated over to versions here in the United States?
Well, you know, I've had a few, like, you know, individuals call in and tell me stories. But I think just like with any, because the United States has such a big cross-cultural population, you have people who brought these stories over, like the Cornish miners and the Tommyknockers. You know, they would bring over these beliefs and they would bring over these ideas. And meanwhile, there are, you know, of course, there are people here before the, you know, the Cornish and the Irish and the English came. And there's, you know, there's a lot of Native American traditions about, you know, offerings for house spirits and other kind of creatures. But one thing that's really consistent around the world is the idea, especially with indigenous peoples, that all everything has sort of like a spirit in it. So you have, you know, a plant has a spirit in it, a tree has a spirit in it, a rock has a spirit in it. You see this in spiritual practices around the world. And that idea, you know, the idea that those spirits are actually these, you know, can sort of manifest as these other little entities. I mean, many people believe that fairies, you know, originated from sort of the, you know, the four elements and the elementals in Ireland and sort of branched off from that. But, you know, that's just the Irish lore. There's, you know, there's around the world, there are creatures. And I think, you know, I haven't even really gotten into too much, you know, the local legends here where I live in Minnesota, but just from the little that I've known, I've heard stories of repeated stories of little, you know, elfin like creatures or, something that, you know, sort of a little hooded thing that skirted the prairies. So I think, you know, when you start digging and asking around, you'll find, a lot of these things actually match up with some of the modern cryptid and even, you know, dare I say, even some of the modern alien encounters. You know, sometimes I just think, well, maybe we're just dealing with the fairy kingdom and, you know, we've got it mixed up. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, that's not so far removed from possibility, right? I mean, it would fit into kind of part of the history and legend and lore of what's seen. And many of times these UFO and craft are seen in wooded areas.
Right.
Right. Descending into wooded areas. These crop circles are known to appear in, and those are associated with UFO phenomena. And those appear in the wilderness, which is where these beings seem so powerful and almost like elementals or creatures that kind of live through the land.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's kind of, you know, it's one of those areas that, you know, you start out with one idea of what they are. What's a fairy? Okay, well, a fairy, you know, it has wings and it flies around my yard. And then you kind of just travel this path and you find that, you know, there's connections to like the Headless Horseman legend and, you know, the Pooka and this sort of like wild beast that ride across the night and scare you. And there's connections to warning ghosts that let you know when someone's sick. And, you know, there's some of these, I think, they fit so beautifully in with whatever kind of structure of belief we have, you know, whether it's, you know, we believe in God and we believe in the devil or we believe in, you know, elementals and, you know, we believe in fairies or we believe in all of those things, you know. Some of them fit in so nicely into that. And then some of them are very clearly tales, allegorical tales meant to teach you something. Like maybe it's don't cross a fairy, but maybe it's also like, you know, don't spend so much time at the pub or don't be so greedy or, you know, don't stand on that loaf of bread and sink down into the marsh. That would never have happened if you weren't so greedy and weren't worried about spoiling your shoes. So there's plenty of, you know, kind of fairy tales like that. And I find both of those angles very fascinating. And I do try and kind of bring them together a bit in the book, because to me, they're not exclusive of each other. The, you know, the quote unquote real and the quote unquote, you know, folklore. I mean, you know, I definitely subscribe to the idea that we spend a lot of time trying to disprove a myth that ends up being true. So
one of my favorite movies, and I just saw the play last year, is Harvey with Jimmy Stewart. And I think
he's a Pooka.
Right. Harry Anderson, I think, did the remake of it. But Harry, the giant 6-foot-tall rabbit that's the drinking buddy of Elwood P. Dowd, is a Pooka. Yeah.
He is a Pooka. And that's a great that's an example of a Pooka that I like to relate to people, because the Pooka is not actually really doing anything wrong, but only Elwood P. Dowd can see them. And Pookas tend to prey on drunks. They do tend to prey on the town drunk, because no one will believe them. So that person that is dismissed as crazy or rambling or, oh, they must have just had too much to drink, that is the Pooka's like best friend, because they can just get away with messing with them over and over again. And in that movie, you know, Elwood P. Dowd is just constantly like, you know, just he's sort of accepted the Pooka and kind of just deals with him. Oh, that's my Pooka there, you know, and just kind of just has this conversation with him. But it does from the outside ostracize him and his, you know, his sister in the process, because he's just sort of looked at as like this crazy town drunk. And the Pooka just like, there's a lot of Pooka stories like that where, oh, I don't know, I just woke up in this ditch. Oh, sure you did. Sure, it was the Pooka that and left you in the ditch.
What's,
you know,
kind of fascinating about that, too, is the fact that think of how many of our children have had a quote unquote imaginary friend. And it's usually some kind of animal, a speaking, talking animal that, you know, you will hear them converse with and carry on conversations with, as though there is something living and breathing in that room with them. And, you know, a lot of people want to jump to the nefarious side. Oh, it's a demon taking on this realm and doing this. And maybe it is. Maybe it's just these Pookas who like the innocence of Elwood P. Dowd is what Harvey just thinks. He's a great guy. Right. So this magical, invisible, giant 6-foot bunny just thinks he's a wonderful man and wants to hang with him because he accepts him. And they have fun together. They drink. They get drunk together. They just have. If you haven't seen it, folks, you've got to see it. You love the paranormal. It's a clever, heartwarming, absolutely sweet and charming movie. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of It's a Wonderful Life. That's on my watch list every year, as is Harvey. It is one of those kind of movies where you just realize why Jimmy Stewart was one of the most loved actors in America, because he plays it so wonderfully.
You believe in this bunny, I'll tell you that by the end.
Well, you believe he believes in the bunny, that's for sure. It's a great story.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I think I have a few quotes from Elwood P. Dowd in the Pooka section of the book, too, because, you know, you can't be without. That's an excellent example that people can see in sort of a modern, I mean, I say modern, I mean, that movie was made, you know, it's black and white. It was made in the 40s. But to me, that's still a little bit modern. A modern example, I think, you know, Donnie Darko sort of played with that idea.
Right.
It's kind of like creepy rabbit following you around. But, you know, just kind of going back to that idea of like children and their imaginary friends and, you know, so quickly dismissing what they say or, you know, as, oh, it's just made up, or just the fact that we call them imaginary friends instead of just, you know, well, it's just your friend. I think, you know, there's something like really, really valuable that we all get out of suspending that, turning that part of our brain off that is constantly telling us that it cannot possibly be and it cannot possibly be true. And we can get lost in a fairy tale and we can get lost in an experience. And when we do that, I think it actually does a lot for us just on a personal level. So whatever you believe, whether you believe fairies are real or ghosts are real, or you just like to hear a good story, there's something that's happening in your mind that is sort of allowing you to believe what you might otherwise explain, and you get lost in that. And that, I think, then allows you to believe in many other things, like yourself and your ability to do things and, you know, your trust in people and creativity and all this other stuff that kind of comes out of it. So regardless of if you believe, you know, fairies are real, you know, if you love art or you love music or you love anything that kind of comes out, or you've ever had, you know, that ability, you know, you're writing something and you tap into something else, you tap into the muse. I think that's all, you know, connected. And so I, you know, to me, it's like, okay, I think the fairies for, you know, certain things, but there's this sort of great thing that happens when you suspend your doubt for just long enough to listen to the tale. And I think it's just really invaluable and well worth, you know, examining and reading and believing.
At the risk of deafening the audience with the sound of Tim's rolling eyeballs as I make this next comment, Varla, it also makes you, if you start looking at these legends and lore, it makes you wonder about stories like angels and ghosts. Could they truly be just this fairy folk, these magical characters that have watched us and witnessed us, like the borrowers or, you know, any of these little fun versions of characters? Could it be that when the messages are coming through, they're taking on the visage of something we'd know and recognize?
Well, and I think we call things what we're comfortable calling them. So some people are more comfortable saying it was a ghost. Other people are like, I don't know what that was, but I think it might have been a gremlin. You know, we don't always have words in our language for these experiences. And so we have great words like, you know, we have words like God, and we have words like puka, and, you know, things that kind of make sense to us to explain these, you know, what I think of as supernatural experiences. And, you know, you could easily say that they are all of, you know, one realm, but I think, you know, they certainly all kind of exist for our own, you know, for a similar reason. Anytime somebody has that kind of experience where, you know, they've seen a fairy or they've seen a ghost, I mean, that's really it's really a gift. If you have the second sight, that's considered a gift. It's the second sight. It's not your first sight. It's your second one. And it's a gift to be able to see and perceive these things, just as we think of psychics as having psychic gifts. That's not to say there aren't, you know, a sea of charlatans out there, but, you know, those of us that really have that sight can sift through those things. And, you know, that's kind of our job in the supernatural, you know, supernatural warrior front.
The idea of some of these, I think the reason people have such a hard time swallowing ideas like fairies, pukas, changelings, elves, gnomes, brownies, gremlins, all of that is the fact that they seem to tell a cautionary tale in most cases, right? Whether it's leprechauns talking about, you know, greed, or the fairy folk and you not, you know, giving back and being kind. They punish you when you act up and don't do the things, and, you know, the trolls taking you if you're disrespectful. And it seems that most of those stories all reflect around, or all revolve around rather, moralistic intentions. Whereas when you see a ghost, you just see a ghost. You know, it wasn't like, don't go back in the woolly swamp, or, you know, that's just a ghost story. But, you know, there's a story to be told. But I mean, these stories all seem to have some kind of thing about respecting nature, about respecting where we've come from, about respecting our adults and our family, and be careful of the woods because, okay, if animals aren't enough to scare you, then let's throw out the blood sucking, you know, fairy folk that might steal you away and make you dance all night long and through eternity.
You no longer breathe. Yeah.
Right. I mean, do you think that that's why it's less acceptable and why it might be more tongue in cheek to our European friends?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the other big issue, and we have this time and time again with the written record of, you know, indigenous and pagan beliefs, is that we have this overlapping period of time in which all of the recordings were incredibly authentic and were coming from a very specific point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not sitting there hearing story as it was originally told to you. You've got, you know, these kind of like filters that are passed down, and that's certainly true. I mean, I had to sift through a lot of, I mean, even the stuff that William Butler Yeats gathered around Ireland. I mean, initially, and he is beloved, and I love him, but his original title for his great volume on folklore was, you know, Folk and Fairy Tales of the Irish Peasantry, of which he did not consider himself a peasant. So there was a class system in place that it was like, you know, the old poor guy telling the story in the village. And so there's this,
the ignorant, this is their story.
Exactly. And there's this permeating level of dismissal for things like that, because of, you know, the way that knowledge finally comes to us. And we see this all the time with the way that people look at and, you know, treat the stories of indigenous peoples in the United States and the First Peoples. And, you know, we'll revel it and we'll put it in a tattoo on our arm. But when it comes down to it, are we really getting it? You know, so I definitely think, I mean, I'm not saying that fairies and ghosts are the same thing by any means. And I think you're right. I mean, ghosts, it can be a very individual and very arbitrary experience. But I think there's something about, you know, we have this tendency to think of myth as make-believe. And I don't know that myth is really like the right word for what these stories are and what's happening. And who are we to say? I mean, there's with mermaids, I get this all the time. It's like mermaids can't possibly be real. Well, nobody thought that giant squids were real. And then they went further and further and deeper and found these insane giant creatures, the Pacific squid that like reaches up and pulls down fishing boats. So, you know, maybe only time will tell, and fairies have plenty of time. I mean, they will wait us out for sure.
Unbelievable. Varla, thank you so much for spending the evening with us and sharing your new book, Fairies, Pookas, and Changelings, A Complete Guide to the Wild and Wicked Enchanted Realm. We'll have to meet up here in Minnesota and share some more fun stories as we tip a pint. How about that?
That sounds great. And thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be a guest on this awesome podcast.
It's always fun to visit with you. Varla Ventura, we'll have links up for her. You can check out varlaventura.net to find more information, or at facebook.com/Varla. Period Ventura. All right. Well, that's it for this evening. And we appreciate everybody joining us this week and spending time with us for all the great guests we've had, all the fascinating topics. Remember, I'll be hosting Coast to Coast AM tomorrow night while Tim is at IWI Wrestling. Telling people how they can come see you and spend time with you.
That's May 6th and May 13th.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
A week away. Well, I don't want you to promote too early, then forget it.
Well, no. I want to tell people that we've got two great cards in the month of May. May 6th is the Night of the Luchas. So all Lucha Libre Wrestling on May 6th to celebrate Cinco de Mayo weekend. And then May 13th, we have our regularly scheduled card. So we have two great weekends of wrestling. You can get your tickets right now at moundstheater.org, both VIP seating and discount general admission seating.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So check that out for yourselves. Make that part of your world. We want to thank our sponsors this evening, Audible, an Amazon company. Remember, if you're on the go and you want to take your stories with you, Audible's the way to do it. And for listeners of Beyond the Darkness, they're offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Just visit audibletrial.com/darkness. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, your Android, Kindle, or any MP3 player. If you can't remember, just visit darknessradio.com. Click on the Killer Deals link to find more information there. While you're visiting, also check out the Amazon links. Anything you need to purchase through Amazon, use our Amazon links. Small portion of each sale goes to help us out on the show and keep us afloat. We hope that we have met all of your needs this week. We'll be back with you again next week with a brand new set of five new Beyond the Darkness episodes and a brand new True Crime Tuesday. And remember, if you'd like to subscribe and you'd like to get in on the True Crime Tuesday, totally ad-free, commercial-free podcasting, we'd like you to go check it out. Go to darknessradio.com, click on the True Crime Tuesday banner, and that will take you to the page to investigate and sign up. It's only $5 a month. That gets you a minimum of four episodes a month, and they're going to be 90 minutes to 120 minutes long. That's right, 90 minutes to 2 hours long. Never a repeat. Every week there'll be a brand new episode waiting for you. And when you have those special months, Tim, where there's an additional Tuesday in that month,
oh yeah,
they get an additional episode, no extra charge.
What?
That's our gift from us to them.
That's
all
a steal.
They have to do is $5, a buck and a quarter an episode, basically, is the way it breaks down. $5, the cup of one goofy unicorn flavored frappe.
Yeah.
Or is that frappe? I'm not quite sure.
It's
I'm not French.
Frappuccino there,
Frappuccino. Then you can use that money and be able to keep up with us here. Thank you to all of those that have already signed up and all of you that are considering it. You love our show. You love True Crime Tuesday. Please consider signing up and following our membership there. All right. We'll be back tonight. Tomorrow I'm hosting Coast to Coast AM from midnight till 4 a.m. Tonight, George Nori has Sigh and Dreams with Lloyd Auerbach. And then 2 hours of open lines. You can find more information on that at coasttocoastam.com. Or you can always stream it from our home station here in St. Cloud. Stream it from knsiradio.com. They bring you the best of overnight talk radio, and they are the home for the best in paranormal talk radio. We are Beyond the Darkness.